Yes, indeed. A big warm thank you to the Brekkie team for kicking us off on another day. But don't go away, because coming up next is a science show. It's a science show without a name. There's a story behind that. We might fill you in on that one a little bit later. But it's science, and we're in summer mode. So we've got a whole bunch of people in the studio here today to have a bit of a chat about science and Australia. Because it's Australia Day, people, and it's time to celebrate. So don't go away. We'll be around for the next half an hour of science. Yes, welcome to the science show with no name. The science show that used to be called something to do with discos. I'm not entirely sure. We're in the search for a new name here at the Community Broadcasting Networks and 2SER's science show. So if you've got any ideas, send them our way. My name's Chris Stewart. I'm joined in the studio by Matt Clark.
Hello.
And Jackie Hayes.
Hello.
And Jackie Peffer, Jackie number two.
Hi.
Two Jackies in the one studio.
Just to confuse you all.
Can we handle the Jackiness here today? Look, it's a big week this really for Australian science, which is what we're about, because it's Australia Day, or at least in some parts of the world where you're listening to this in some broadcasts, it's Australia Day. In other parts of the world, it'll be Australia Day tomorrow, and in other parts of the world, it'll be Australia Day yesterday. I don't know, but it's Australia Day somewhere, sometime, and we're excited about that. So the theme of today's show is Australia and Australian science. You got that, guys? So I thought maybe we could kick off by having a bit of a chat about some of the success that Australians and Australian scientists had just a little while ago in 2005, because of course the Nobel Prizes were announced towards the end of last year, and we Australians can be proud because we actually had a bit of a go in last year's Nobel Prizes. Jackie, who was the Australian or the Australians who won last year?
Last year, it was Barry Marshall and Robin Warren, and I believe you did an interview last year, Chris.
That's right. You caught me on that one. I was pretending not to know, and you called my bluff.
Well, last year, they won an award for the discovery that Helicobacter pylori, which bacteria, causes stomach ulcers, not stress, or whatever else they might have believed it to be, but it is, in fact, bacteria.
That's right, because there was this long-standing assumption in medical circles that stomach ulcers are just a lifestyle problem, that, you know, you're too stressed and too much acid in the stomach building up from the stress, and so you get these ulcers, and so we give you the medication, and you're on that for life, basically. And these guys came along and said, no, bacteria, antibiotics, very, very easy.
And one of them actually proved it by drinking a whole culture of the bacteria, which is pretty brave.
Yeah. Mm. Especially as I heard his wife was, I think she was pregnant, or they had a couple of young kids or something, right when he decided to do that. And so that took him out of action for like 2 weeks, and she was really pissed off at him.
Would
have taken him out of a lot of action, yeah.
I think it probably would have. So that was the Nobel Prize for Medicine and Physiology, 2005. But we have a bit of a long history of Nobel Prizes in Australia.
We have 12 Nobel winners from Australia, and believe it or not, 11 of them won it for science or mathematics. There's only one guy, Patrick White, who won it for literature in 1973, but the rest have all been for science.
Well, I guess given that the majority of Nobel Prizes are in the scientific fields, I mean, you've got physics, chemistry, medicine and physiology,
mathematics,
peace,
economics.
There's no mathematics.
Is it mathematics?
Economics and literature. So the majority of them are science. So we need really to sort of word up to Australian scientists. Good on you guys. So who are our historical winners?
Well, we have the father and son duo, Lawrence and William Bragg, who received one in 1915. Then we've got Howard Florey, of course, from 1945, who worked on penicillin. He also received it with Alexander Fleming and Ernest Chain, who mm-hmm. are both British. We've got McFarlane Burnett, who won one in 1960 for his work on immunology. Then in 1963, we've got John Eccles.
Or Eccles.
Eccles. My pronunciation's terrible.
Good old Eccles.
Yes. Eccles. John Cornforth in 1975, who won one in chemistry. Then John Harsanyi in 1994, who, this is where I'm getting confused with the mathematics, because he won one for mathematical contributions to economics.
Ah, yes.
There we go. And then in 1996, Peter Doherty and Rolf M. Zinkernagel.
Good name.
Great name. I think one of them's Swiss. They won one in immunology. So there's our
excellent. And of course, Doherty has recently put out a book called...
Really?
Was it How to Win a Nobel Prize or the Idiot's Guide to Winning a Nobel Prize or something like that?
Yeah, I've seen that around.
Yeah. In which he...
Nobels for beginners.
But he's essentially not sort of saying, here's a 10-step guide to winning a Nobel Prize, but rather, this is what you've got to have in society to make sure that we've got people out there capable of winning a Nobel Prize. And he kind of gives a bit of a stick to the current Australian government. So go, Peter. Come on, Peter. It was a big year last year for the Nobel Prizes, but it was also a big year for Australians for that other great recognition of scientific prowess and genius, and that's, of course, the Ig Nobel Prizes, the prizes that are given for research that perhaps oughtn't to have been done in the first place. Matt, what were the Ig Nobel Prizes from Australia last year?
The Ig Nobels, we won one in physics and also in biology.
Now, I think I know the physics one.
Mainstone and the late Thomas Parnell from the University of Queensland. And this is a very very long-running scientific experiment. What they've been doing, I'm not sure why, but since 1927, they have been watching a congealed glob of black tar that has been slowly dripping through a funnel at a rate of approximately one drop every 9 years.
Now, I've seen it because I went to the University of Queensland. I did my undergrad there.
You've seen the glob?
Yeah, I've seen it. And it was just hanging there. It's this big funnel filled with black stuff and there's a big blob on the end of it. And you look at it and go, cool, it's going to drop any minute now or any year or any decade. It's just, you know, it takes years.
9 years, apparently.
Yeah. They had a webcam on it. And apparently the webcam actually went offline right when the damn thing dropped, which is just fabulous irony.
Do they take bets on when it's going to...
I think so. I think so. But there's long odds on it, obviously. So that was physics. What were the other Ig Nobels?
Well, biology. Benjamin Smith from the University of Adelaide. He has, and along with University of Toronto in Canada, and the Firmament Perfume Company in Geneva. They have been smelling and cataloguing the particular odours of 131 different species of frogs.
Of course they have.
And not only just the frogs, but when they're feeling stressed.
Because you wouldn't want to smell a calm frog. You want to smell a stressed frog.
Oh, definitely.
Do we know why they're doing this?
Well, as with most Ig Nobel Prizes, no. We don't know why. There was not in Australia. There was another beauty of a guy was monitoring a locust while the locust was watching Star Wars to see what effect it had on him.
Get that guy some money to do more research.
Yes.
We're going to play it Apocalypse Now next time and see what it does there.
That's right.
And welcome back to The Science Show with No Name. We're in the search for a new name, so if you have any good ideas for what would make a good title for a science show, then send them our way. Our cunningly hidden email address is notdiscovery@2ser.com. Very, very cunning there. Listen, it's a summer mode, which means we're just kicking around and having a bit of a chat, and it's Australia Day week kind of thing here in the 2SER studios. Jackie, what are you doing this Australia Day?
Well, Chris, like a lot of other people in Australia and around the world, I think I'll be dilating my BK potassium channels.
You'll be doing what?
I'll be dilating my BK potassium channels.
Okay, and for those of us who don't speak that particular language, what are you talking about?
The BK potassium channel is what's activated when somebody becomes intoxicated.
Indeed. Mm. So, in other words, getting pissed, what you're talking about?
Yes.
In good Australia Day fashion.
Chucking back a couple of beers.
Right. Now, nothing says Australia like chucking back a couple of beers, but you've got a story which is about worms getting pissed.
Well, funnily enough, how they found out this channel is activated was by getting a bunch of worms pissed for 6 years.
6 years?
6 years. 6 years getting hundreds of thousands of worms drunk, which is, you know...
Is this just the worms trying to avoid a hangover?
Were they drunk for 6 years? Like some sort of massive...
No, I don't think so. I think the study actually went for 6 years. I might be exaggerating a bit.
Right, so it wasn't the same worm at the end of it just, God... Just let it end.
Hundreds
Imagine
of thousands.
That hangover.
Hundreds of thousands of worms were intoxicated during this study.
Okay, so the big question here, of course, is why?
Well, to find out how to fix, I guess, alcoholism. in humans. So a bunch of scientists from San Francisco got worms intoxicated and saw their response to the alcohol. So normal worms, sober worms, if you will, wiggle in a certain way. And by watching intoxicated worms, the scientists deciphered exactly the effect of the alcohol on these worms. And they narrowed it down to a single gene which activates the BK potassium channel in the worms.
Right.
And yes, if this gene is in fact disabled, the mutant worm actually behaves drunk when there's no alcohol around.
Right. Oh. So it becomes a cheap date.
Yes. I don't know if that's what they were looking for in the worms.
Right.
Yeah. How suave they were.
Now, I mean, seriously here, if they're looking at doing some research in order to try to understand the effects of alcohol and maybe apply this to helping people who've got alcohol problems, maybe, how close a model to the human being is the worm? I mean, can you extrapolate this research?
I'm glad you said that, asked that question. The person in charge of the study, Dr. McIntyre, he has come out with a great quote, which is that the process in humans is more complex because a worm is not a human.
Thank you, Dr. McIntyre. the Nobel Prize there for stating the vacuously obvious.
Yes. However, it is in fact similar across a whole lot of animals, including mice. And they do, in fact, believe that it is this channel in humans that does activate the whole intoxicated, stumbling, clumpiness.
Fantastic.
But how did they actually get the worms drunk? Because the worms don't have elbows to be able to lift the schooner up.
They just drop.
Making the tiny little schooners.
They dropped the worms in the beer and said, if you can get out, then you live. And the worms have just got to drink their way out. It's the only way. Well, listen, that's drinking.
I happened to meet a brewery once.
Tell us later, perhaps, over a drink, Matt. Drinking on Australia Day is a national tradition. I think it's in the Constitution. But of course, the other big thing for Australia Day is going to the beach and avoiding being eaten by a shark. Now, Matt, you've got a story about shark nets, which apparently are not quite as great a fortification for a beach as I had thought.
No, well, shark nets have been in Australia for about 70 years, since we brought them in about 1936. And there's two pretty interesting facts about shark nets, the two opposing facts on why they should be scrapped and why they shouldn't. The first one is that there has not been a single fatal shark attack on any beach which has had a shark net on it.
Not one.
And since before 1936, on the Sydney ocean beaches like Bondi, Manly, there would be one a year before that.
Okay.
As soon as they put the nets in, none.
So the shark nets are a good thing, obviously.
Well,
not if you're a shark. But,
not if you're a shark, and not if you happen to be, I'm not, but some people happen to be dolphins and porpoises, dugongs.
Dolphins and porpoises are people too. They're not worms.
Rays, turtles. In New South Wales alone, between 72 and 90, so we're missing 15, between 72 and 90, there was 4,500 sharks caught.
In the nets. Yeah.
But there was 94 dolphins, there's 5 dugongs, 2,000 rays.
Bloody hell.
And even a killer whale somehow.
A killer whale
off New South Wales coast.
Goodness me. So these nets aren't just keeping the sharks and other critters away, they're actually catching them.
That's what they do. The nets aren't designed to say, no, don't come in.
Right.
What they're specifically designed to actually catch and entangle the sharks. And so the sharks, and unfortunately all these other types of animals, they actually drown. So they don't get caught it's not like a fly screen door where the fly hits the door and goes,
bounces off.
Oh, go next door.
Yeah.
The nets have a mesh that is 50 centimetres in diameter.
Right.
And so that it's specifically designed so that will get a dorsal fin or a pectoral fin or a tail stuck in there.
And of course, if a shark can't swim, it can't get water flowing through the gills and it doesn't breathe.
And it's also designed that big so it doesn't stop other fish.
Right.
But the thing about shark nets that people may not be aware about is that all they are is a 200-metre long strip of net that does not go from the top of the beach for the water to the bottom. It's there is still around about a 4 meter gap between the bottom of the net and the ocean floor, and there's also kilometers and kilometers of beach on either side of the net.
Hang on. You're saying that the net is not like big wall between us and the ocean. No. It's more like a tennis net where you could just walk around it.
That's right. It is exactly like...
How stupid's a shark?
Well, that's well, unfortunately, sharks don't have a very good eyesight. They can only see about 6 meters or something in front of them. And if the water is not good in the first place, they just run into it. And their head goes into it, they get a dorsal fin into it, and they're stuffed.
Basically, they're playing the statistics here. They're saying that the shark's going to get caught before it finds a way around.
That is the theory. The theory of the shark net works by the more we catch, the less they can eat us.
Nice one. Well, that's Australia Day science for you. We've got drunken worms. We've got stupid sharks. Doesn't get much more Australian than that.
Up until now, my ideas have been latent. The cycling world will never be the same. But come first light, I'll be taking out a patent. And from that day, if a bike be found lying on the ground again, I'm not to blame. What joy it'll bring, piece of metal and a spring, bolted down by the back wheel, activated by the heel. What joy it'll bring, piece of metal and a spring. What chicken laid the egg, from whence inside an idea hatches, from prototype to production line to the first 100 batches. I will do for parking box what anchors did for sailing. What joy it'll bring, piece of metal and a spring.
Yes, and welcome back to The Science Show with No Name. We're in summer mode and we're in Australia Day mode, because it's January 26th. Australia Day, time when all Australian scientists and non-scientists get out there and celebrate by getting worms pissed and getting eaten by a shark or something. We're going to talk a little bit about celebrating Australian inventions. Jackie number two, you've got a good one for us. What's your Australian invention of the week?
Well, a guy has just recently developed some new technology for backpackers.
Backpackers, another good Australian tradition.
Coogee, be mobbed by backpackers. Sounds to me a little bit like a cross between WAP, which is your internet on your mobile phone, and all of those new phone services that you can call up and they give you information. But what it is, it's essentially a piece of technology that you can download onto your mobile phone, which backpackers can use to communicate with other backpackers, find out all sorts of information about different places and things around Australia. So they've developed this. I think something you were saying earlier, Matt, they've got to try and make it cheap enough for backpackers to afford it, though, don't they?
That's right. A price point of about 20 beers. any more than that, it's probably gone too much.
Jeez, that's optimistic, mate. If I was choosing between, can I have on my mobile phone all the information that I will ever need, or 20 beers... I was backpacking. There's no contest there.
I'm sure after 20 beers, you'd be more than willing to ask somebody for the information.
Depends if it's middies or schooners, though.
Yeah, well, fair point. So where has this been developed?
It's been developed by a PhD student at the University of Queensland.
Right.
And what he's decided is that rather than sitting down and focusing on all sorts of different technology and then trying to apply it to something, what they've done is they've gone out and studied backpackers and the different lifestyles and sort of habits of backpackers and tried to apply technology to that lifestyle.
Geez, there's a novel idea. Rather than inventing something and then forcing it on a public that doesn't want to pay for it, you go, what do you guys need? What does a backpacker need? Well, well done to Queensland PhD student. What's his name?
His name is Jeff, and I'm going to spell his last name because there's no way I'm going to be able to pronounce this. It's A-X-U-P.
Axup.
Axel.
Jeff Axel. Nice one, Jeff. I'd vote for your PhD there. I'd give you a doctorate, definitely. Mm. That's the just one Australian invention. But, of course, Australians have been inventive ever since people ever stepped foot on these shores. So, guys, give us a rundown. What are some of the best Australian inventions that you've come across?
Well, there are a couple that I know of that are quite well known.
Mm-hmm.
The bionic ear.
The bionic ear, yes, a big one.
Invented by Professor Graham Clark at the University of Melbourne in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, spray-on skin for the burns victims, developed by Dr. Fiona Wood.
That's a fairly recent one, isn't it?
The spray-on skin? It was 2002 to help with the Bali terrorist bombings.
Mm. Mm.
So there are a couple of good inventions in the medical realm.
That's as far as medical is concerned, if you're interested in that kind of stuff. But
go on then, Matt. Go on. What have you got to top that?
The important ones. The ones I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The wine cask.
For those. Yeah, for those.
1965.
For those listening around Australia, of course, we're talking about the goon.
Mm-hmm.
For those who've never come across this brilliant invention, we're talking the cardboard box, which has got the sort of silver bladder inside that you fill with really cheap wine. And, of course, the best part about this invention is when you've finished it and you feel like having a bit of a wine-induced snooze, you can always inflate the internal bladder and sleep on it as a pillow.
Well, a funny trick my father likes to do is when there's not much left in it, you actually blow it up and you can get the last half a glass out.
Ah, very clever. Yeah.
It's not a very good thing to do at dinner parties, though.
No, not really. Mind you, if you're having a goon at a dinner party, you're already in trouble.
Well, that's a point.
The wine cask, the goon, that's Australian. What else is Australian?
There is. Well, there's the ute.
The ute.
In
1934,
this is a bit debatable. It was invented by the Ford Motor Company, but in Geelong.
Right.
So I think we can claim it.
I think we can. And if you're not listening in Australia, listening to us on podcast around the world, the ute is a bit like an American pickup, but generally smaller. If you imagine the love child of a pickup and a sedan, you've got a ute.
Yes.
Yep.
And so of course the ute needs the sheepdog in the back.
It does. It does.
Some other interesting ones, very widely used. The differential in your car.
That's Australian.
That's Australian,
apparently.
Invented in 1897.
Really? There you go.
It's incorporated into a steam car by David Shearer.
So before that, there was just a lot of grinding of gears, and then Aussie went, hang on.
A lot of shearing of gears. David Shearer took the shearing in.
Boom, boom.
Of course, there's the black box flight recorder. 1958.
Mm-hmm. That's Australian. We're proud of that one.
Other automotive ones. The rack and pinion steering.
Rack and pinion steering is ours.
In 1970, engineer Arthur Bishop was quickly adopted, of course, in cars all around the world.
So car-related inventions, you know, we did pretty well. Is there anything about the ute that we didn't invent? Basically, it's all ours. The differential, the rack and pinion steering, the ute itself is ours. Any non-car-related inventions worth noting?
I do have one other one, though.
I'll go on, then.
We must add Kiwi shoe polish.
Kiwi shoe polish.
Invented in Melbourne by William Ramsay.
Yeah, not the Kiwis.
No.
Our friends across the Tasman.
Just to stick that in there.
Well, I've got one that's fairly fundamental and obvious, but the notepad, which...
Hang on, we're talking pieces of paper...
Glued together.
And like,
who never thought of that?
Who even knew that was an invention?
I know, I just thought that grew on trees somewhere, all stuck together.
So who invented that?
J.A. Birchall from Launceston.
Well done.
Just woke up one morning and thought, hey, I'm going to glue some pieces of paper together so I can keep all my thoughts and notes all in check. And, of course, latex gloves were developed in 1945, also an Australian invention.
Mm. So you can wear your latex gloves when you're handling your notepaper so that you don't give yourself a paper cut.
Well, that's very exactly important. Right.
Yeah. That's probably why they were invented.
I reckon they were. Yes. Yeah.
And, of course, we have a couple of good inventions in the scientific world.
Oh, back to science again. Okay.
Yes. Sorry to bring you back to science.
I guess it is a science show.
It is.
Who would have thought it?
X-ray crystallography.
X-ray crystallography. Anyone? X-ray crystallography?
Examining crystal structures.
Yes, a very important thing, I believe.
William and Lawrence Bragg.
Yeah.
Nobel Prize.
The Braggs, the Nobel Prize. And that, or a derivative of it, I believe, was crucial in identifying the structure of DNA. X-ray crystallography.
Mm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, listeners.
We don't see Lewis Brandt winning a Nobel Prize for inventing the ute, though, do we?
What's there isn't a Nobel Prize for hooning, though, I'm afraid. Other scientific inventions?
The atomic absorption spectrophotometer.
Mm-hmm.
Developed at CSIRO in 1952.
Which is, I'm assuming, identifying atoms or constituent, you know, parts of a material by shining light or radiation through it and seeing what gets absorbed, what doesn't come out the other end. So a very good scientific technique.
Yes. The SynRock.
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 Yeah.
I believe it stands for synthetic rock.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But this isn't just something for paving your driveway. This is for getting rid of nuclear waste.
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah. Just pack it into a bit of SynRock, bury it deep underground. The nuclear waste is packed away, apparently, for thousands 30. Of years.
Oh.
No?
I thought it was 30 years.
But or 30 years. I'm not sponsored by SynRock.
give or take a factor.
Out of sight,
thousand.
Out of mind.
Yeah, look, a long time. Anyway. Yes, indeed. That is all the time we have for this edition of a particular science show that currently has no name. We're in the hunt for a new name, actually. And so if you've got any good ideas for what would make a good name for a radio science show, send them our way. You can send us an email at notdiscovery@2ser.com. And we've actually had the first one of these come through from a listener. This is from Raina Lee Shannon, suggested the name Disc Recovery. There's a bit of a play on words there. Sounds a bit too much like an IT show to my mind anyway, but it's a good start. notdiscovery@2ser.com. Joining me in the studio this week was Matt Clark.
Hello.
And we
goodbye,
had,
as it were.
Goodbye. We had two Jackies, Jackie Peffer.
Happy Australia Day, everybody.
And Jackie Hayes.
See you later, mate.
Thanks, guys, for joining us on this very Australian celebratory edition of this science show. It's brought to you from the Plush Velvet Studios here at 2SER, right up the top of the UTS Tower here in Sydney, and beamed out across this wide brown land by the Community Broadcasting Network. We are in summer mode, but we won't be for much longer. So join us again next week when we'll be back with more science news and stories. Catch you in a week's time. Bye-bye.